Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Good afternoon on this Friday afternoon, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And that's a bit of good news at the end of a horrific week, I would imagine, for survivors of the mother and baby homes, that the legislation can be introduced. We don't have to go to a referendum. So that's good news in the news there. How are you on this Friday? Loads of things going on. There's a text in straight away from William in Drogheda. He says, what's the soup of the day today? Clodagh McKenna is going to be here after 4 o'clock. It's a very posh soup today. It involves that word that I always get wrong. Celeriac. Because when you see it, you go, celericum, celeriac. Anyway, it involves celeriac. William, I've never cooked with celeriac myself, but this is going to be the first time this weekend, and maybe you'll be joining me. There's hazelnuts involved as well. Anyway, that's after 4 o'clock. Clodagh McKenna. We have two dads who are in charge of homeschooling in their house. Two dads that you'll know, Brian Redmond from Dancing with the Stars and Bas Ashmawe from loads of things. And they're going to be talking to us about the whole experience of overseeing homeschooling. And PJ Gallagher is on. And PJ, you know, is a comedian. You know that. He's a broadcaster. What you may not know about PJ is that he was born in Bessborough. PJ Gallagher was born in Bessborough. And he told me that, I don't know, it could be nearly 10 years ago. And at the time, I didn't know what Bessborough was. And neither did most people in Ireland. Well, a lot of people in Ireland didn't know what Bessborough was. And now everybody knows what it is and was, unfortunately. But anyway, PJ is going to tell us his story about being born in Bessborough and what happened after that. So I'm looking forward to talking to him about that. And loads more things. Did you see that photograph? It's an amazing photograph by a guy called Niall. Better get his... Niall O'Carroll. He posted it up on his Instagram or his social media. It's a picture of Snowdon in Wales, but it's taken from Dublin. And that's 140 kilometres. And it's this amazing picture because in the foreground you get, you know, suburban Dublin, and then you get the sea, the Irish Sea, and then off in the distance, Snowdon, snow-covered Snowdon in Wales, 140 kilometres away. And it's an amazing picture. It's just an amazing picture. And it's getting a lot of reaction from people on both sides of the Irish Sea and from photography enthusiasts. They're probably going, what camera did he use? Definitely wasn't using an old iPhone or a Samsung. It was a posh one. Yes, it was. Niall was using a Panasonic Lumix DMZ TZ100. Whoa! Sounds like it has an engine. Panasonic Lumix DMZ TZ100. And since sharing the photo on Instagram and Facebook has begun to go viral, with one Twitter user's post gaining over 27,000 likes in the space of 24 hours. And he's been on BBC Wales and all sorts of things. Now he's getting a mention on RTE1, the national broadcaster. So well done, Niall. It's a great picture. Do you know what strikes me? When you see it, you know what I mean. The houses in the foreground, which are, it doesn't specify exactly where he is. Oh, Howth. He's in Howth. It doesn't look Irish to me. It's something about the colours or something like that. I thought it was someplace like Australia, suburban Australia, but it's Howth. There's something about it that doesn't look Irish. I can't put my finger on it, but there it is. Well done, Niall. Well done, Niall. Wikipedia celebrates its birthday today. Happy birthday, Wikipedia. Yeah, on the 15th of January 2001, two American entrepreneurs, Jimmy Wales and Larry Sanger, launched an online encyclopedia. At the start, there were a lot of inaccuracies, but it is now the 15th most popular destination on the web, and it's available in more than 300 languages. As you know, it's maintained by a community of volunteer editors. So people go in and share their information with the rest of the world. There are 56 million articles on it, 3 billion edits, and 1.7 billion unique visitors every month. And it's in 316 languages. And you know what I did today for the crack? See what happened. See if it would explode the internet. I wanted to see if there was a Wikipedia page for Wikipedia. And as it happens, there is. There you go. There is. What do you get if you Google Google? And it says, Wikipedia, multilingual, open, collaborative, online encyclopedia created and maintained by a community of volunteer editors using a wiki-based editing system. And obviously everything there is factually correct. It'd be very embarrassing if the Wikipedia page on Wikipedia had inaccuracies in it, wouldn't it? Anyway, happy birthday, Wikipedia. And a lot of people, I suppose, are using Wikipedia now more than ever because they're working from home and See now that the government is to legislate to give employees the right to request remote working as part of a national remote working strategy. They're reckoning that 20% of the public sector workers will be working remotely eventually. And there's loads of things going on there. It's about rights. It's about tax incentives, I suppose. It's about broadband. And broadband, I think, is, you know, they need to get their act together when it comes to broadband. But you can't ask people to work from home if they're waiting for 1.5 hours to upload 15 seconds of an audio thing, like happens in my house. Well, not so bad now. We've got it fixed a little bit. Yeah. So there, that's that. And I was saying we're going to be talking to Baz and Brian about homeschooling. The word of today for Tom, he's aged 8, coddywomple. Coddywomple. Have you ever heard of coddywomple? The lads haven't heard of it. No. It's the definition of coddywomple is to walk purposely to a vague destination. Now, that seems contradictory, doesn't it? To walk purposefully to a vague destination. Coddywomple. It sounds like a Roald Dahl word, doesn't it? Anyway, so I don't know how you'd put coddywomple in a sentence. I think the reason they chose that word is that we're all sort of coddywompling around at the moment. We're trying to keep ourselves busy and doing things like homeschooling and working from home. And yet we're very unsure and uncertain about where exactly we're going. It's all very vague. So maybe there's national coddywompling going on. Whiz popper. You know what whiz popper is? Yes, that is a Roald Dahl word. Whiz popper. And here's a cracker of a whiz popper. Have a listen to this. Yeah, that is a fart. A whiz popper. And it's a famous whiz popper because it's from the behind of no less than Joe Wicks. Jenny pointed out this to me last night. It's Friday. The words come a little bit slower on a Friday. Anyway, he was about to do one of his now world famous workouts, which he's sharing with everybody. He started doing them again last Monday because everywhere is in lockdown again. Well, not everywhere, but the UK is. And I see Canada's going into it and Portugal, and we're in lockdown. Anyway, so he was about to do it, and it's very energetic. And I think the plan was the first thing was a split or something like that. And he had a bit of wind building up, and he decided he better get rid of it before he starts his 20 or 25 minute workout. But he didn't know the mics were on, and all his fans were entertained by that. Anyway, he was embarrassed, and he got on to apologise. This is his statement. This is a public service announcement. I've got a confession to make. On Monday the 11th of January at 8:59 a.m. I made a mistake. I squatted down and felt a huge build-up of pressure in my tummy just before I thought I was live on air, and whilst in a panic I hastily let rip, and unfortunately the sound was heard far and wide. It's a whiz popper. To those listening on a 50-inch TV with a subwoofer on Dolby surround sound, please forgive me. I'm extremely embarrassed, and I will do my best to ensure this doesn't happen again. I was backed into a corner with nowhere to go. Time was running out, and I planned on making a big entrance with a full splits. So I went for it and squeezed as hard and as fast as I could. A tear ran down my face. I didn't know this had been recorded until I saw an article on the news. Please forgive me. Guilty as charged. Your Honour. Joe Wicks. Yeah, you need a bit of distraction. Amy was on to us, RadRT.ie. And she says, seems silly writing this with everything that's going on in the world, but yesterday I said goodbye to my first car. Ah. Oh. All the memories brought a little tear to my eye. After 10 years and numerous NCTs, it was time to retire her. And it kind of caught me off guard because a lot of memories flooded back to me. 2 trips to the electric picnic, the great weekend in Galway with my old boyfriend, driving to my new job for the first time, and lately driving within 2K and 5K limits during the last year. I laughed and cried in that car, listened to the radio during 2020. Little things really, but the car was there throughout. Anyway, it was time to trade her in, so I just wanted to salute my little Ford Focus. Here's to my first car, says Amy. It's a big deal, Amy. I wouldn't underestimate it. It's a big deal. Because your first car, it's the big, you know, when you think about big purchases in your life, your first car, your house, they're the big ones really, aren't they? They're the big ones. And everybody remembers their first car. Did you ask? Oh, you did. Yeah. Baby blue Toyota Starlet. I was 20. And Amy doesn't give the details of her collecting the car in the garage, but I'll share mine with you just for the laugh. So the guy who owned the garage, I played rugby with him, right? So I arrived down and he's standing outside in the forecourt of an evening with his mate, and they're having a chat. It could have been a nice spring evening. So I arrive up to collect my baby blue Toyota Starlet, second hand. And I get in. And I was, you know, I wasn't the best driver in the world. I'd done a few lessons. And he was there and he was looking at me and I got in. And they were chatting away. They weren't really paying too much attention to me. So tried it, nothing happened. Tried it, nothing happened. Tried it, nothing happened. And then he came over, helped me out. But in the attempts to start the car, I flooded the engine. And I don't know if this still happens in cars when you flood the engine. But when I eventually got going, I started chugged out of the forecourt of the garage, the two lads looking at me. I'm sure they thought that I wasn't going to make it home. But I did. But it met a sorry end, did the baby blue Toyota Starlet. It was November morning with an icy road between Kildare and Newbridge. And it did a 180 degree turn. Then it went up onto its roof into a ravine. Luckily, myself and Philip, who was in the car with me, got out unscathed. But the poor car, seemingly we damaged every panel in the car. And I had to pay somebody to take it away from me. Didn't even get a trade-in value. Anyway, Amy, yes, it's a big day saying goodbye to your first car. And good luck on your new one. Well may you wear, as Granny Bonner used to say. And Kelly has been on to RadRT.ie as well. I loved all the soup recipes over the last week. Could I suggest that you do a series of programmes on the humble potato? Would that be pushing it a bit, Anne? It appears that Irish people have reduced their consumption of the potato in favour of various pastas, rices, noodles, etc. The humble potato is so versatile. Boiled potatoes, chips, roast potatoes, cheese and garlic potatoes, potatoes au gratin, baked potatoes, stuffed baked potatoes, just to name a few variations. I'm pretty sure your listeners will come up with loads of recipes and ideas for the humble potato. Just a suggestion. Anne Kelly in Dublin. I don't know. We've still a few soups in us. So we'll stick with the soups for the moment and we'll see what happens after that. Boiled potatoes, chips, roast potatoes, cheese and garlic potatoes, potatoes au gratin, baked potatoes, stuffed baked potatoes. But you see, what more do you say about them? What more do you say about the potato? Everyone knows. Maybe. I don't know. Doug, I see Doug Ledden was tweeting about being stopped by the guards because the guards now are out there enforcing the 5K rule and making sure that people who are out driving have a purpose or are within their 5Ks. So he relays a conversation that went on between him and a guard who stopped him. So the guard, is the purpose of your trip essential? Doug, yes, we're trying to stop the baby from crying. Guard, oh Jesus, not more essential. On you go. Irish guards can be gas. Yeah, we've all been there. And then you see they get addicted to the putting them in the car and driving around. And then you think you can't do anything else to get them to sleep, put them in the car and drive them around. And tough. Mary was wondering the name of the book about the lady you interviewed earlier. I think her name is Gabrielle. Well, Gabrielle was one of our contributors to A Page My Life, Mary. And A Page My Life is available in the shops. So you can read Gabrielle's contribution and 149 others. And Gabrielle is planning to write a memoir or a Romana Atlef. Is it Romana Atlef? I think that's what she said it was. It was a novel based on real events. I think that's what she said. But really enjoyed that. And you can listen back to Gabrielle if you missed her yesterday. And you can listen back to anything that went on this week or previous weeks. And we had some great chats this week. Richard Mulligan was on Tuesday. And Richard was born in Shanross Abbey. And he just was one of those people who just really impressive. Thoughtful, forgiving, and he was, as I said the other day, he was disarming in the fact that he wasn't angry and wasn't bitter about what had happened to his mother. Anyway, that's up to this and loads more if you want to go and download podcasts. It seems we're having Baz and Brian on about homeschooling. Neve has been on and says, my experience at primary school during the pandemic with two children was shockingly disappointing. Homework was designated a week ahead or a day ahead. No teaching took place. One teacher did engage and phoned parents once, but that was about it. My daughter cried with frustration several nights as her school was so bad with no engagement with students, and some friends in other schools had Zoom classes, says Niamh. Well, we spoke to Coleman Nocter yesterday and he did a bit of research. 1,000 parents gave information, and what he concluded was that there is a huge difference between what different schools are providing when it comes to homeschooling. Some of them just sending out emails and others having five or six Zoom classes a day. So, and everything in between. So I don't know what's going on with the Department of Education and what you're supposed to do and what you have to do, but that's the reality of things on the ground. 5 on 5 on RayRT.ie. Celeriac, thank you. That's my favourite type of soup, says Jane. So she's looking forward to Clodagh McKenna after 4 o'clock. Another use of celeriac is to use it with smoked salmon to make badgies. My own invention, says Ken in Wexford. My first car was a Nissan Micra, red and full of energy like me at the time. Reminds me of my days in Rathmines when I used to party, says that person. And that was my first car too, baby blue Toyota Starlet 40 years ago. Is it that long ago? Okay, Did you know that all the young ones buying cars nowadays will only buy white or black? I didn't know that. Mine was a Volvo no less, 5 doors. I felt so swish, says Dylan. And you brought a smile to my face mentioning collywobbles. I was immediately transported back to my younger days when in frustration I'd be hauled in off the road while playing to sort out my room, as I'd be told, those collywobbles will be coming out of the walls to meet you unless you get it sorted. God bless my dearly departed mother. Her patience with me was sorely tested. That's Clinus. Was it cuddywomple? It was cuddywomple was the word. Yeah, cuddywomple was the word, not collywobbles, but sure, whatever. We had a teacher nicknamed Collywobbles. We're gone somewhere else. It doesn't matter. Collywobbles, cuddywomples, whiz poppers, whatever you're having yourself. 51551 RayRT.ie. Good afternoon. I'm just wondering, is it John Baptiste or John Baptist? Anyway, that is It's All Right. And that's music from the new Disney movie Soul, which if you haven't seen, can I highly recommend it to you. It's brilliant for both children and adults, and it's great music, and that's from it, John Baptiste or Baptist. And he's the band leader or musical director for the Stephen Colbert show, the late night show in America. Baptiste. Okay, if you're looking to talk about potatoes, you could do worse than talking to my brother, Padraig O'Gallagher of the Boxley House. He gives lectures on the subject all over the world. Well, we'll keep that on file. Ronan, thank you very much. That's Ronan Gallagher in Mohill. My first car was a 96 Fiat Punto, £500 back in 2001. So that person. That's Barry. And Grace, I said goodbye to my first car this week too, after driving it for 12 years. It had become very old and was costing a bomb to maintain. I bought it outright with savings from my first year teaching when I still lived at home and paid much lower rent. During the last 12 years, it carried me to many events, occasions, and driven me to many wonderful adventures. It has dropped my youngest brother to primary school, secondary school, and to college. I was our designated driver on every Christmas Eve so the folks could have a drink. I used to pick up my other brother on Christmas Eve and drive to the parents' house, and the tiny Micra would be full of presents and Christmas excitement. I thought to myself, why am I getting so emotional about what is basically a tool, a car? I realised this is probably more about what it stands for. It was symbolic of my freedom, independence, and being my first big purchase, a great sense of pride. That's Grace, who's working from home. WFH. I thought you would like this story. My first car was a wine Fiat 850. I paid £396 in old money for it. I love this car, even though it let me down a lot. An old Italian car in an Irish climate just didn't gel. I even put a hot water bottle under the bonnet in wintertime overnight to keep it warm. Ah, isn't that lovely? I can still remember when I sold it. It had to be towed away and the tears were streaming down my face. Just love that car, says Fran in Dublin. And my first car was a bottle green Anglia. I called it Nimble. I never understood that, calling your car a name. Betsy. Go on, Betsy, come on. Oh, you're trying to get a car up a hill. Go on, Betsy. And inevitably, they're female as well, aren't they? Cars are female, they're not male. I don't understand that either. Anyway, quiz of today. We're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer 5 questions each on events that happened on this day, the 15th of January, over the years, decades, centuries. And we have a prize, as we do. It comes from the Dylan in Dublin, a 5-star luxury boutique hotel, a magical place where guests can relax in the plush, stylish, romantic surrounds of the Ruby Room. With its extensive cocktail menu, or dine inside or out in the stylish Edison and Nursery terraces, both covered and heated for our guests' comfort, they say. And you can find out more in the Dylan.ie. It's an overnight stay for two people in a luxury double room, breakfast included. Okay, so here's your qualifying question if you want to come on and try your luck on our quiz of today. Brussels is the capital city of which European country? Brussels is the capital city of which European country? 1850 715 900. 1857 15900, and Fiona and Emily are upstairs awaiting your calls. 1857 15900, and we may be talking to you after 4 o'clock. Good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
6 years later, I always give my old car a kiss when parting with it. Garage guys got gobsmacked. Noeline from Carlow. So six cars later, I always give my old car a kiss when parting with it. Oh, there you go. That's Noeline. Becomes very attached to her cars. And Olive in Dundalk. My first car was Dad's 1969 Morris Minor. I took over the car in 1996 after he passed away. It was his pride and joy, much to our mortification. My friend Anne-Marie was embarrassed by the car until she realised it attracted a lot of attention. Babe magnet, her words. When driving to Dundalk from Dublin to see my boyfriend, I had a cassette player on the seat beside it, as we had no radio. Sold it a couple of years ago. Tons of memories. That's Olive in Dundalk. PJ Gallagher, how are you?
How are you? How things? Hello again.
Yeah, good to talk to you. What was your first car?
It was an Austin Montego. It was a real junker of a thing.
I'll have to look that up now online. I wouldn't know one if I saw one in the street. An Austin Montego.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know when you buy a car or you get a certain colour car and then all of a sudden you think you see them everywhere?
Yes.
You get yourself a Ford Fiesta and the next thing all you see is Ford Fiestas. Well, I had an Austin Montego and I never saw them anywhere. I drove over, like the first week I had it, I drove over this huge big plaster, like the blue plastic builder sheet thing, and it melted to the bottom of it. So every time I drove over it, it smelled like it was on fire. So it was awful, this burnt plastic. So even if you gave someone a lift, you'd have to say, no, listen, we're not on fire. It's just, this is a terrible car.
So, I'm looking at it there. What year was that?
I think it was a 91.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Austin Montego. Yeah. They're sort of square looking yoke. Square looking.
It was a square. Everything about it was square. Even the engine looked like Lego, to be honest with you.
Okay. But your preferred mode of transport is a motorbike.
Motorbikes, yeah, always motorbikes, yeah, if I can.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking about you this week because of Bessborough, obviously, and that's where you were born. And I suppose people will know that about you because you did the play and you were on The Late Late Show talking about it, and you've talked to me about it over the years, but people forget, and particularly this week, because we assume that people are older, but Bessborough didn't close until the 90s.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. I mean, it's gas. I assume too that people forget, but then this week I've received so many text messages from people, just saying, hope you're all right, and hearing this, that and the other, and hearing the news and everything. But I guess for me, to be honest, it's like, there's nothing new in it for me this week. These are stories I've heard my whole life and conversations I've had with my family for my whole life. It's been the backdrop to my entire life. So, it's upsetting to hear it echoed again. But also I have to remember, like, I don't have memories of any of this, you know. I live with the consequences of it, but I don't have direct memories like so many others. And, you know, I suppose I can only really speak for myself and my own experience, and everyone's experience is so, so different, you know.
Yeah. So you were born in Bessborough in 1975, was it?
Yeah, well, my mother was sent to Bessborough, yeah. So I was born in 1975, yeah.
Okay, right. And what happened? What do you know happened?
Well, as far as the details, I don't know. I can't say too much because it's not my story.
Yes,
but
yeah.
I know my mother was sent there, and I was born. I was sent to foster care then in Finglas for 6 months, and I suppose I didn't really realise for a lot of my life what a mother and baby home was. You know, I grew up just thinking I was adopted. I didn't really realise what the history of the mother and baby homes or any of that was. That came later. You know, and then that comes as a shock. And before I'd met my family then, you know, my birth family, you start to wonder and question and panic in a way, as to what your own background is, because it can be scary, you know. Mm. And then this week, to be honest with you, I've sort of avoided the news as much as possible, to be honest, because, like I said to you, I don't really feel, like, for me personally, I don't really feel like there's anything new in it, and it makes it uncomfortable. And I've had these conversations for so long, for so long. And for years now, I've been meeting people since we did the show Separated at Birth, and people come up to me and share their stories with me randomly. And I've heard stories that would really make, like, they've really shocked me. And Yeah, I mean, it's hard and it's strange, and a lot of the time I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest, about my own stories.
Yeah, so, like, and as you say, everybody's story is different. And yours, I suppose, if there's ever a happy ending, yours has one.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's the thing. You know, when you meet the social workers initially, when you start your search, one of the first things they'll tell you is you need to be prepared for anything. You don't know what story you're going to hear.
Yeah.
And it could be any story. It could be tragic. It could be something you couldn't imagine. And for me, it wasn't. For me, I found two people who loved each other, who got married, who had more children, and who lived, whose lives worked out well. And I suppose that's as good as it'll ever be, you know. So there's huge relief in that for me.
So you have full siblings?
I do, yeah. Yeah, I do.
Right.
Four, actually, yeah. So I have four. So, yeah, and that's unusual then, you know, I was trying to process that.
Yes.
And how I stick out and why I'm different. And then I suppose you start to see, you ask yourself then, is this the reason why I'm such a strange person? You know, because I suppose, like, you know, everybody tells me I'm so distant and I'm so hard to break down and I'm so hard to get close to. And then I've met so many adopted people and they tell the same story. And you start to think, well, this is it then, is it? Is this why I'm so distant? Is why
is
I don't
it?
Trust people?
Is it?
I think it is. Yeah, I think so. I do. I think so. I think it might be part of why I'm not a great friend and why I prefer dogs to people and why, like, you know, I have an ex-wife as opposed to a wife. Because you know, the whole idea of family is something that it doesn't feel completely right or tight with me.
But here's the thing, and this is because I want to try and understand this. Like, you, your adoptive parents, you loved very much.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And they were brilliant. And it was a happy childhood you had.
Well, yeah, like, I suppose, you know, I was probably more trouble to them than they were for me.
Right.
You know,
okay.
So I suppose. So I guess. Yeah, it was as normal a child as you could have.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's the case in my kid. Like, I mean, the whole madhouse story is a different thing.
Yes,
as well.
Yes, yeah. But
yeah, you do love your parents. Of course you do. But then you're always aware because you speak to people that you're different, you know? Like, I tell the story in the show when I suddenly realised everybody else wasn't adopted and what a shock that came to me. Like, I was in primary school talking to a fella and I still remember it so well. And initially, I remember talking to him, and as we were talking, it became obvious that he was not an adopted person. And then I remember that my first thought as a kid who knew no better was, like, the poor fella, like, they couldn't find anyone to take him. Like, they couldn't, you know, they'd nowhere to put this poor fella, and he's still in his, like, oh, the poor lad, it must feel terrible.
Yeah, I'm laughing here, but it's very sad, isn't it? It's
I know, it's
sad.
Pretty sad, but it is, but it's, I mean, that is a funny story,
yeah,
like,
it is,
you know.
It is.
And then, I, you know. Then,
don't get too earnest, Ray. It's a funny story.
Yeah, like, that is a funny story, but then, it was only after that I started to realise, oh, I'm the one that sticks out, I'm the one that's different, and, you know, and where that took me then.
You said there a couple of minutes ago that you have to live with the consequences of it. What do you believe are the consequences?
Well, I do think that the way I form relationships is probably unhealthy. Well, if I can form them at all. I, like I mentioned to you earlier on, I definitely think that that's a big part of it. You know, the ability to trust people and the ability to make friends and the ability. And I think largely a part of what I did as a career, you know, dying for attention and to be recognised and to be, you know, to be seen and to be heard and to feel that you fit in. And I've always felt I never fit in anywhere. I've lived most of my life, I think, trying to justify my existence. I think that's seriously a huge thing. I think I've tried to always justify my existence, you know, to try and find a place to fit in. And I think that probably comes from that. Hazarding a guess.
Yeah, and you've had this chat with people who've been adopted, and there's a commonality.
Definitely. You know, since we did the show, and then I would hear, I obviously people would talk, and I started having these conversations, and then there was a couple of conferences on where I was meeting other people who are adopted, and we all seem to have these things in common, you know, these personality traits. Now, this is anecdotal, like,
yes,
I'm not an expert,
but
we all seem to have these things in common, and we all seem to have these stories, and to a large part, there was a real familiarity in meeting these people, you know, and I remember talking to one person and he was saying he would, like myself, he's like, I love getting close to someone to a point and then the fear kicks in. He was saying, I'd love to meet someone who'd live next door to me. And I remember thinking, that's an amazing way of explaining it. Like, I'd love to meet someone I could be so close to that I'd be happy to live next door to them, but never let them into the house, you know.
Is it as simple as a fear of rejection? But you see, this is the thing. Like,
I don't think it. I think maybe it's more a fear of actually being accepted, more a fear of being sort of loved, not being able to take a certain amount of us, you know.
Yeah.
That you come to just not trust or not believe, I think, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. Without getting too morose on you, you know. Yeah.
No, but that's fine. I don't mind. Have you ever been down to Bessborough, PJ?
I never did. I threatened to go down to myself loads of times. And I worked in Cork for the last 3 years making young offenders.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was always constantly on my mind to go down and visit and to go down and even have a look. And I could never bring myself to do it. And I don't really know why. Because literally every single time I got in the car and took that trip, I would go down and fully had the intention of this is the trip, this is the week I'll go down, and then just long fingering it and sort of being afraid. I think I was afraid of what it would, I don't know why, just as like a fear, you know, and anxiety that I was not this time, maybe next time.
Yeah, I'm sure you've chatted to your birth mother about Bessborough, and I know it's her story to tell, but I was just reading through the testimonies from people who were in Bessborough in the report. And there are a number of testimonies from women who were in it in the early 70s. So they would have shared a similar experience, you know, as in a Bessborough experience to your mother.
Yeah.
Would you be interested in reading that? Or?
Well, I remember reading a book called The Light in the Window, I think it was called. And it was written by a woman who worked in Bessborough. And I think that was kind of enough for me, to be honest.
Okay.
Because she tells so many stories of so many things she saw and how it was run, and then there was the stories I caught, you know, through family and other people I'd met. Mm. I think I've had enough as my parents. Yeah, I know. I don't think there'd be anything new. Okay. I think I'd just be reading more of the same.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
It's just a pledge, really, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's great now that it's out there. I remember the first time I talked about this on radio, and it was with you.
Yeah.
And I was
how
in
many
the studio
years
with
ago
you,
is that?
And I
how many years?
I don't know.
Could be 10.
I really don't know.
Yeah, go on, Amos. Sorry.
And I remember mentioning Bessborough to you, and at that point, no one had heard it, to the point that you guys were Googling it in the studio.
Yeah.
So I guess now that everybody's heard of it, that it's out there, is a great thing. That it's not hidden anymore. That people like myself and other people feel that they can talk about it and be open about it, and not feel ashamed or guilty or any of that sort of stuff with it, you know.
Yours wasn't a forced adoption, you know, because we heard a lot of talk about forced adoptions during the week. It wasn't a forced adoption.
No.
Because they were just at a stage in their life where, you know, they felt that they couldn't have a child. And
culturally, it would have been very difficult, you know, for a young woman in the west of Ireland to have done, you know, to have done that. You know,
out of wedlock, as they said, yes.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it mad, you know, thinking about it, like, and you know, I'm a bit older than you, about 10 years, but like we were scared. We had the fear of God in us when we were going to school about sex before marriage and all that. It was just like, you know, the things that might happen to you if you had sex before marriage, and you know, it's a different time.
So many things were taboo, you know. Yeah. So many things were, and you know, so many inappropriate things were okay, and so many other things were not. Yeah. You know, it was the strangest time to grow up, really. And then I look back on it all as well. I look back on the mother and baby homes, and it was just a small amount of time. That's what's so weird about it as well. Like, that's why I think I feel connected to so many people from it, because it happened for a couple of generations. You know, we went to that independence, and then this happened, and then it ended, and it'll never happen again. You know, adoption was never the same again, and it's not the same now. And so this was this window of time where that has connected a lot of us.
Yeah, the adoption was adoption was legalized in 1951-52 in Ireland. Now, you know, people would say that there was you know, illegal adoptions before that, but that's when it became legal.
Yeah.
And like so there was the time then, the end of the 50s, 60s, 70s, when there would have been a lot of it, and you were one of those people. And then I suppose it's all but nearly disappeared now.
Yeah, well, it has almost disappeared to the point that it's actually sad now that people can't adopt, you know, that people who really want to be parents can't, you know. So the shift and the turn and how rapidly that all happened is, I don't know. I don't really have a word for it. Like, it's mad, for want of a better word. It's such a strange chapter of our history, and it's a dark one too. You know?
Very dark, very dark. Yeah. So thanks so much for, you know, because obviously you were trying to, you know, steer clear of it and ignore it, which I can understand completely. So sorry for making you chat about it there.
It's fine.
Okay. So you're still on the radio in the mornings.
I am, yeah. I'm still on with Jim McCabe every morning talking nonsense. Yeah.
It's good nonsense, though. It's funny nonsense.
Well, we like it. Yeah, we definitely like it. Like, it's good fun, and I'm so glad I had it during the lockdown and all of that stuff, you know. It's been deadly that in the lockdown I've had the privilege of boredom. That's what I keep telling people. Like, so many people have had real problems through the lockdown. I've friends who would love to be bored, but they're riddled with anxiety and fears of what they're going to do. And I've just been, you know, I'm eating Easter eggs in January and getting bored watching Netflix. So I'm very the privilege of boredom.
The privilege of boredom. That's brilliant. That is brilliant.
I have to remind myself every day I'm bored out of my mind, and that is the best way it can be in the world at the moment. So that's okay.
So do you do it from home? Not the boredom, but do you do the show from home, or do you go in?
I do the boredom at home. I do the boredom at home, yeah. And then I go into work. No, we're lucky that we have two different studios, so we sit in completely different rooms and we can see each other through a pane of glass.
Ah, brilliant.
So it's great. Yeah, so we have that, yeah. That's been fantastic, you know. Yeah.
And then there's been a lovely connection with audiences, you know, radio audiences through the lockdown, the pandemic. People have turned to
really
radio.
Has.
Yeah,
there has. It's something that you'd never get through stand-up or something, you know, and you see this, people contact you. It's so weird. Radio's so personal, you know.
Yes, yeah.
You nearly build up attachments with people that listen. Like, it's getting to the stage where if somebody doesn't text in, you think I better call them and see if they're all right.
That's great. I better say hello to Aina Mullingar. You just reminded me. I'm 50 years of age. I was born in Bessborough, like PJ. I met him at the bar in a hotel in Cork. We spoke a little. He's a gentleman. His story is what I went through emotionally. Thanks, PJ. So there you go. And listen to PJ, and so much of what he is saying resonates very strongly with me. I had a very happy adoption, but yet I can see its consequences on many areas of my life, particularly trying to form romantic relationships.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a part of it. I really do. I've spoken to people and that tell me the same stories. And I can always tell you my stories as well. Like, I mean, like, I'm getting past, there's this, I'm like, I'll come on to your show and I'll overshare my entire life to the whole country. I've no problem with it. And then one-on-one, I'm like, you know, someone asks me, how are you? And I'm like, what's it to you? Like, why are you asking me? Like, you know, it just gets the pressure of any intimacy kills me. Like, it kills me.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, all right. Okay.
You know, so that's the thing, you know, I'm so non-trusting, I suppose.
And you've talked to people, professional people about this.
You know, but then do I trust them either? Like, I don't know. Like, I think I got more therapy out of telling, like, seeing roomfuls of people react to me telling stories than I did out of one person, you know? But I have done. Yeah, I've talked to professional people about it. And, like, that's probably the right thing to do. But, you know, I don't know if I'm very good at the right thing most of the time.
No, look, I think you're very hard on yourself. And I think that's another symptom, another consequence of what happened to you. People are hard on themselves. PJ, mind yourself. Enjoy the boredom.
And I will do, the privilege of boredom. Yeah, I won't enjoy it, but I'll be delighted to have it.
Right, and I look forward to seeing you in the flesh sometime in the future. And we actually might hug. That's the thing, because isn't that what people are looking forward to? Hugging people that aren't members of their family. You know, it's just...
I'm into this anti-social distancing. I hope we never have to hug each other again, I'll be honest. I've been enjoying the anti-social distancing.
Okay.
Like,
okay,
it's the one highlight of this.
Right. See you, PJ. Good luck.
See you,
bye, 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 bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or Ray at RTE.ie. It's just after 10 to 4. And school's out. Yeah, first week of homeschooling. Finished about an hour ago, I would imagine. And on the line, we have two dads who are responsible for homeschooling in their houses. Brian Redmond from Dancing with the Stars and Baz Ashmawe from Everything. How are you doing, Brian?
How are you doing, Ray? Good to see you.
How are you doing, Baz?
Yeah. Yeah, good. Yeah,
So, Baz, I'll go to you first. So just give us the details of your charges.
Just say this, right? It's very heart to talk about giving out about your kids now after PJ talking about adoption.
Yes,
because
yes.
I was thinking of putting four of mine on done deal, really. But we'll deliver as well. I've like sick of it this week, Ray. Like I've got four at home, so I've got an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old. They're both in primary, and then I have a 16-year-old in fifth year, and a boy doing his leaving.
Right. Okay. We're going to try and clean up your line there, Baz. So I'll just go to Brian to get his details. Yeah. You've two, Brian.
Yeah, I've only got half the problem that Baz has, but it doesn't feel it make it feel any better every day. No, it's I've got a 6-year-old who's in senior infants, and then Alex who's 11, so he's in fourth class this year. So yeah, it's fairly full on. It's been a learning experience, not just for them, but certainly for me.
But you teach dance, so you have experience of teaching, albeit not, you know, Irish, English, maths. But you have experience of passing information on to other people.
Yeah, and I teach a lot of kids, but the big problem is that they're not my kids, they're somebody else's. So the relationship is obviously very different, you know. And I started to realise that on Monday morning around about 10:15 when I said to my eldest Alex, I said, right, come on, time for school. And my wife Jen had already left for work for the day, so she's out working. And the first thing Alex said to me was, oh, I thought you were the fun one. So there you go. Straight away he thought, you know, the relationship here is going to have to change a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's been the challenge. You've got the experience, obviously, when you're dealing with sort of junior school kids. The actual coursework itself is not, you know, beyond your realms of capability, but it's changing that relationship so they respect you enough. Yeah. And even Anna now during the week wouldn't listen to me. And then she sat down for a little Zoom meeting with one of her teachers during the week. And I could see why the teachers write on the report, she's an absolute pleasure to have in class. But I think they're lying. I absolutely convinced they're lying.
Yeah. And Baz, would you ever become a teacher after your experience of this week?
No, I don't think so. It's just trying to keep on top of it all and keep them motivated and not beat yourself up about it. I think everyone's just trying their best, you know, that kind of way.
I think that's important what you said there. Don't beat yourself up about it.
Because it's no point. There's just no point to doing that. Like, but there's just a part of me that, like, I've one kid and she's great on the Zoom. She's ace and she's fine. And her older sister, just like, it doesn't work for her. She needs to be engaged in a kind of tactile way, you know.
Yeah.
And it's difficult for her, you know. So, but you're trying your best, but you can get down about it. But I'm lucky. Like, we have a house, and they're all in separate rooms, and I have Tanya helping me, and you know, like, it's, I'm not in it alone, you know. But yeah.
And how are the breaks, for example? Yo, how are they arranged?
I'm like the canteen lady, right? Like, yeah, it's okay being the teacher, but the teachers don't run into the canteen and then start making hot chocolates and pizzas at lunchtime. And, like, one of them sat there today, no mess, and I said, do you want to take, like, a croissant or something? And she went, you don't have a brioche, do you? And I was like, I'll just pop off and get you one now. We're like, you know, like, it's just, it's a slave. You're their slave, this problem, you know? And now it's the weekend, and I get to spend more time with them. So,
And that's the thing, is Brian, that's the thing, because there's no demarcation now. You know,
no, it's not. I mean, I'm quite lucky in one sense, I suppose, because Jen is out at work. So when she comes in this afternoon, it will feel like the weekend. But I've had to deal with them all on my own. But I have a tip for Baz in relation to the feeding thing. I came up with this idea during the week. I cleaned out an old paint can and I cut some holes in it. And I hung it up in the middle of the kitchen, a bit like a bird feeder. And I've just loaded a load of stuff into it in the morning and I let them peck at it during the day.
very good.
I took some of the old chocolates out of a selection box and put them in the middle and surrounded it with carrots, so they just sort of gnaw their way through to the last over parts of the selection box.
And Baz, you would have been doing this the first lockdown as well. Does it feel different this time round?
Do you know what it is? I think the teachers have a better hold on it.
Yeah.
You know, I think they've got a better. I think the children are more familiar with the Zoom calls and stuff like that. It's just for some people. Like, if you've got a kid that needs that little bit extra, and the homework, you know, and then you're moaning to your kids all the time about being on screen, yet they spend the whole day on screen.
Do you know what I mean?
That's, you're kind of contradicting yourself.
That's a real challenge, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, like, they've just discovered that there's, like, Google Chat. This is the latest thing. So, like, I'm policing them. I'm spying through doors. And I just have other stuff to do, Ray. Like, that's the thing. But yeah. Like, they're just chances. It's in their DNA. They have that kind of...
Jenny was saying to me today, and it's a very good point she made, is that, like, in some of... I was looking over Tom's shoulder as well, and in fairness to the teachers, it's new to everybody, but they're trying to recreate a classroom environment on Zoom. And sure. Maybe that's not the best thing to do.
No, absolutely not. It's a nightmare. Yeah. No, it's a nightmare. I mean, in terms of that technology, I mean, my own phone app popped up this week, and it's the first time I've seen that Seesaw was actually used more this week than Instagram was in terms of the amount of time that I spent on it. So it's a nightmare that way. And I mean, you know, I know what it's like. I've tried teaching some of the dance kids through Zoom, and you just can't get them to sit still. I mean, they've got the novelty of being told to go on the screen, you know, so it's very different that way. But it's also challenging because, I mean, school wouldn't have been, it was a big part of my life. Obviously, I went to school, but I never went to college. So it's very difficult now to sort of turn table, if you like, and try and tell them that it's important enough to justify spending this time in it when they're looking at you sort of saying, well, you never talked about, you know, spending a huge amount of time at school yourself. So it's a difficult one to get the balance right. But I think Baz is dead right. Balance is the key thing. Yeah, you've got maybe Leaving Cert students need to pay a little bit more attention to it and things like that. But if you're lucky enough that they're only a junior cert, you know, below junior school sort of level, you know, trying to keep that fun in it. Because when we think back ourselves, we don't remember the homework. We don't remember the classwork. We remember the crap that we had with the kids in our classes. Yeah. It's trying to keep that there.
And Coleman Ochter yesterday was saying to us, he's a child and adolescent psychotherapist. He was saying that what they're missing is the interaction. Now, you're fine, Baz, because you have a little army out there, so there's loads of interaction.
But they
are missing that interaction with their mates, aren't they?
And do you know what it is? And this is the truth. It's not homeschooling. Like, what I'm doing, what me and Tanya are doing, is not homeschooling. We're trying to survive a lockdown our children and keep them somewhat mentally engaged.
Yeah.
Like even as soon as, like, they finish up for the day, it's like, grab them by the scruff, grab the dog,
out,
and get out for an hour. Just to shake off, you know, you're constantly just trying to distract them and yourself somewhat from everything that's going on.
You want everybody to get on at the end of all this as well. You know, you don't want to, and that's important. Yeah. You want them still to like you.
But I do. That's fallen like very fast, very fast. But they're doing well. They've learned some new curse words. You know, like, the amount of times me and Tanya have said, is that music? Like, it's just, you know, like, it's metallic stations in us, you know. Yeah. We're just kind of running around aimlessly, but we're getting through it, you know, and the kids are happy, and that's the best you can ask for, you know.
I'm going to have to cut it here, Brian. Sorry about that. And I wanted to talk to you about Dancing with the Stars, but we'll talk another time. And just commiserations on the death of your granny. She was a good age, 95, Annie Redmond.
And she was, 95. Yeah, passed away on Tuesday this week. Thankfully, it wasn't COVID-related, so she had a great life. And if you're going to go anyway, the way she went is definitely the way to go.
No
problem, Baz. Cheers.
Lovely memory there. 95 years of life, 95 years of health, 95 years of independence, 95 years of love given and received, 95 years of full life lived. R.I.P. Nanny. Dance the night away. There you go. Right, Brian, mind yourself. Baz, mind yourself as well. And good luck with the homeschooling. Yeah, we'll make a date every Friday at 10 to 4. We'll have a chat, see how you're getting on. Good luck. See you, lads.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Grandma, good Marion, thanks very much. 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Patricia says, great to hear PJ Gallagher. Thanks for that. Somebody else on PJ. I have a wonderful son who happens to be adopted. He is a wonderfully rounded, happy man who has numerous close friends and knows he is hugely loved. He can have close relationships, doesn't feel rejected, and has no wish to look for his birth mother. That's the other side. Lots of happy adoptees, says that person. And on first cars, my first car was a Renault 4. That was so rusty. I was more excited and proud of that car than any others that came after it. I bought it for £200 and sold it 3 years later for £200 to a farmer who wanted to carry bales in it. Sue, is that the one with the gear stick on the dashboard? Isn't that the one, isn't it? Was that it? Remember that Renault 4? There were a sort of unique looking car, the Renault 4. My first car was a black Golf GTI. Oh, look at you. Only thing real about it was its alloy wheels. Ah, yeah, so it just had the label GTI. One day I went to my garage with my French friend to go to the supermarket. My friend had very little English. Sophie started gesticulating and shouting, "Morrissey car, Morrissey car." That's the way it's written. I'm just reading it phonetically here. I was about to drive off, but I got out of the car to discover it was propped up on four concrete blocks. No more alloy wheels. My first car was a red VW Beetle. Got it in 1963. It cost £350, which I paid for it over 3 years out of my wages with Westmeath County Council. We called her Dilly. I was 18 at the time and drove everywhere in her. Loved her, says Aina. How are you doing, Aina? And my first car was a white Mini. I paid £300 for it 30 years ago. It had a nest of mice in it once. The only accident I ever had was in that car. And it was my then boyfriend, who is now my husband, who crashed it into the back of me. Oh, he crashed into the back of you. You'll have to explain that to us sometime, Eileen and Tip. And my first car was a Toyota Starlet as well. I was so proud, as I was the first person to get a car in my family. But as the story goes, over 30 years ago, New Year's Eve, I was out celebrating, parked in a hotel car park. The night was great until I came out to the hotel to drive family home. And there it was, gone. Never again to be seen. I love that expression. There it was, gone. Robbed. My first car was a green Fiat 127. I went everywhere in that car, as did all my pals. No radio in it, but I had a tape recorder on the passenger seat and all my cassettes. Happy carefree days. Nice memories of first cars. Here we go. Still on the memories with our quiz of today. Today being the 15th of January, and the prize. It's an overnight stay in the Dillon in Dublin. It's a 5-star luxury boutique hotel. And you can find out more at dillon.ie. Dillon.ie. Margaret Fitzsimons. How are you doing, Margaret?
How's it going?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Margaret.
I'm still 49. I'm still 49. One more day in my 40s. I'm going to milk it.
is tomorrow going to be a tough day for you?
Well, it's not going to be the exciting one that I thought it was going to be. I had great plans, but none of them are going to work out for me, unfortunately.
Was there a big party planned? In your head?
No, I wasn't into the party, but I was more into, we had a planned trip to Lanzarote with the girls.
Oh,
I was going to do the family meal beforehand.
Yeah.
You know, all those nice things, get my hair done and everything that I can't do,
Oh, that's so such a lovely idea, isn't it? Lanzarote in the third week in January.
Because Dylan might make up for it a little bit. So,
it wouldn't be too busy, would it? Because the Christmas rush is over.
Perfect.
The only
saving grace is that I looked at the temperatures and they're not great over there at the moment.
So the two.
So when we do eventually get to go, it might be better.
What ages are the two girls?
My two girls, wouldn't be going with them, I'd be going with the girls.
Holiday. Right, okay.
I have two girls here that are diligently homeschooling at the moment. So one is 15 and one is 12, Ella and Chloe.
How is it going for you and them?
Oh, it's marvellous. Absolutely love it. Yeah, I think I should have been a teacher. Like, it's gone so well. No, not. Can you hear the sarcasm?
I can.
Yeah.
It's coming.
One is doing really well. The other one, not so much. It's just, we'll get there anyway.
You'll get there, yeah. And it's important that you cut each other a bit of slack as well. Right, you're up against Garvin Gill from Athlone. How are you doing, Garvin?
Hi, Ray. How are things?
Say hello to Margaret there.
Margaret, how are you doing?
Garvin. Yeah. Hi, Garvin. You heard it was my birthday tomorrow night, didn't you?
You're a chancer, Margaret. No, I went to see your birth cert just in case you're trying to pull a fast one.
You can see it. I have a passport here and everything ready to go.
So, Garvin, you're at home.
I am, yeah.
Yeah, and the work has stopped because what do you do for a living?
But at the moment I'm driving bus for just a school run that I do, you know.
Yeah, so that's stopped.
With no school, there's no bus.
yeah. So how are you filling your days?
I do a lot of walking. I'm sure you'd be delighted to know.
Great, yeah.
Yeah, I do. I do a lovely walk down by the river and it takes me a good while to do it, I try and do it in the middle of the day to break up the day. And I like the garden as well, although that's rock hard at the minute, so you can do nothing out there at the moment.
And do you grow vegetables?
I do, yeah.
Okay.
I do a bit of everything. You know, I do, you know, the last few years I've gotten into a bit more flowers. It was always vegetables.
Right.
My brother used to say to me, he said, geez, they're no good. You can't eat those if there's any flowers in the place.
It's a fair point. It's a fair point. So you've turned to the vegetables. Right. Okay.
Yeah. No, I do a bit of everything. I put in a polytunnel there 2 years ago. Yeah.
Right.
And that, you know, that's keeping me going a little bit at the moment. At least that's not as hard as outside of it anyway.
Yeah. Sure, we had terrible low temperatures last week.
It was.
Now, five questions each. I need an answer as quick as possible. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. And if it's a draw at the end of those five questions, we'll go to a tie break. Good luck to you both, Margaret in Kilpeder and Garvin in Athlone. Here we go. Right, Margaret, first question. On this day in 1973, US President Richard Nixon suspended all US offensive action in Vietnam. On what continent is Vietnam?
Asia
is the correct answer. Garvin, on this day in 1970, Muammar Gaddafi was proclaimed Premier of Libya. On what continent is Libya?
Africa.
Correct answer. Margaret, have a listen to this.
That's right, fool. Now I'm a flying, talking donkey. You might have seen a house fly, maybe even a super fly, but I bet you ain't never seen a donkey fly.
And this day in 2007, at the 64th Golden Globes, Eddie Murphy won the Best Supporting Actor Award for his role in Dreamgirls. You heard him there as Donkey in which animated film franchise?
Madagascar?
No. Shrek.
Shrek.
Yeah.
Shrek. Donkey.
Yeah. Donkey, yeah. Okay, early days. Garvin, have a listen to this.
This is a simple proposition. If you live in this country, you must pay for the privilege. Something, anything. If you pay nothing, you care nothing. What do you care where you throw your rubbish?
And this day in 2012, at the 69th Golden Globes, Meryl Streep won the Best Actress Award for a role in The Iron Lady. As which former British Prime Minister?
Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah, that was a sort of an easy one, wasn't it? Okay.
Yeah.
You agreed too quickly there, Margaret. So much Rex is Cameron. Right, okay. Right, Margaret. On this day in history, Joan of Arc, Roman Catholic saint and national heroine of France, was born in Domrémy in France. In what century was she born? The 13th or the 15th?
Fifteenth.
Correct answer. She was born in 1412. There you go. Well done. And Garvin, on this day in history, Henry VIII declared himself head of the Church of England. In what century did this event take place? Was it the 14th or the 16th?
The 16th.
Yeah, 1535. Okay, so 2-3. Your fourth question, Margaret in Kilpeder, is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
Try to dig what we all say. Trying to cause a big sensation.
On this day in 1965, that rock group released their first album, I Can't Explain. Can you name the band?
Rolling Stones?
No.
No.
The Who? The Who?
The Who.
Carvin knew that
as
well.
Needed my husband here for that one.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, okay. Now, you want to be hoping that Garvin doesn't get this one right, because if he does, you can't catch him. Okay, here we go, Garvin, your audio question. On this day in 1971, that former Beatle released the single My Sweet Lord. Can you name him?
George Harrison.
Correct answer. Did you think his were easier, Margaret?
I think they were slightly now. Maybe a bit of a tribunal needs to be called, I think, as well.
Now, he did know the answer to yours, in fairness to him.
Well, true.
Yeah,
he deserved it.
Well, listen, we're going to send you out...
just to add to my misery.
No, we're going to send you out a couple of mugs instead of just one. And listen, I hope you have a brilliant day tomorrow, and I hope yourself and the girls can end up in Lanzarote at some stage in the not too distant future.
You're made my birthday song to you, right?
Ah, go on, you chancer, you charmer, go on. Margaret, happy birthday, see you, bye. That's Margaret there in Kilpeder in County Wicklow. Garvin, you're off to the Dillon. The 5-star luxury boutique hotel, and if you want to find out more, dillon.ie. Mind yourself, Garvin. Good luck with the cucumbers and tomatoes. See ya. Bye. Bye.
Thanks,
the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Johnny in Yall says the Renault 4 had gear shift in dash. They were built in Wexford in Ireland. Assembled, I suppose, yeah. Didn't they assemble cars in Ireland? Our shed at home was a Volkswagen Beetle box. Yeah, because they were assembled here, so they arrived in big wooden boxes and people used them as sheds. My first car was a Volkswagen Combi pop-top van. She was white and her name was Bessie. She had a crack in her engine that leaked oil. Only went to 45 miles an hour, but managed the whole coast of Australia and up to the Red Centre too. I lived in her happily like a vagabond for 12 months. We had incredible adventures up north and saw unbelievable things out west. I'm still sorry I didn't bring her home, says Deirdre. Every time we do have time for this, yeah. That's beautiful. Lyra. And that was a song that was played just after midnight on RT television. Brilliant performance. Now, in the last couple of weeks, we've been slow cooking onions, getting to grips with orzo, perfecting minestrone and spicing up butternut squash, all the pursuit of finding wonderful winter warming soups. The words of Neil. Thanks very much for that, Neil. Today, Clodagh McKenna joins us to dish up our soup of the day. How are you doing, Clodagh?
Hey, hello. How are you?
Good to talk. You're a Cork woman as well, aren't you?
I am. Who else is?
No, Lyra. We've just heard from Lyra there. She's from Cork. That beautiful song you just heard there. Yeah, she's an amazing singer. So how are things in Highclere Castle? I know you don't live in the castle.
I live in the park. Everything is good. It is what it is, isn't it? Finding lockdown number 3 a little bit more harder or challenging than the first or second. I think we're all in the same boat, no matter where we are in the world. But no, things are good. Just trying to keep busy, Ray, trying to plan out the year, be outside as much as I can in the garden, and doing lots of walks busy.
Yourself and Harry, have you rejuvenated a garden on the grounds of where you live?
Yeah, I'm running. It was 2 years ago when I was on your TV show, wasn't it?
With Harry.
That was so nice. Yes, that's right.
He's a lovely man.
Made Harry famous in Ireland. He's lovely. We recently got engaged.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, so we got engaged this summer, which was really nice. And we moved.
You've probably told people this already, but I better ask you because I don't know the answer. Yeah. How did he propose?
How did he propose? Yes. He proposed on one knee, out in the middle of our woods that are in the parklands. And it was a real surprise. And of course, I said yes. And it was lovely. And we're very happy. So we'll be getting married sometime at the end of this year.
And did he have a ring or?
He had the ring. He'd been kind of planning the ring for about 2 or 3 months because he got a friend to make it.
Right.
So he had it all organized and he was very nervous. And I thought that there was something wrong and he was going to try to, he was telling me that there was something wrong. And then he got down on one knee and I was in shock and it was lovely.
Ah, that's lovely. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
So you're doing what you can around the place. And have you got is it a vegetable garden you've started?
Yeah, so we moved in here 2.5 years ago, and it was a rundown cottage, a rundown property that had been kind of neglected, and we renovated the old walled garden, which was turned into a dumping ground. We renovated it back into a working fruit and vegetable garden. I've actually just run in from there because we're putting up more apple trees. And we've got 10 beds growing all our own vegetables. We've got beehives. We keep chickens. We're getting pigs in another couple of weeks. And we've got orchards going. So we're turning the whole place into a sustainable homestead.
Right.
Which basically means that we're growing enough for ourselves and family members, etc. But it's been a really fantastic journey and great to have a project to do during the lockdown.
And people who didn't see Harry on with me won't know that Highclere Castle was used for the filming of Downton Abbey, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
So, and what you described there is the good life.
And so
you're perfect for some reality TV somewhere between Downton Abbey and The Good Life, with yourself and Harry starring.
But
every time, and this is true, every time I watch a period drama, and there's a lot of them on at the moment, I think of you, because there's Bridgerton on it. There's Bridgerton on at the moment. I don't know if you've seen that. And The Great. Have you seen The Great?
I haven't seen The Great. Is it good?
It's very funny. It's sort of a bit like Downton Abbey meets Blackadder. It's
oh wow.
Yeah, it's I don't know, it's not to everybody's taste, but I find it very funny. It's a bit out there.
Oh god, another one on the list. Brilliant. Yes, I need lots more on my list.
On Channel 4. It's on currently. I think they've only shown two episodes. I think it's on Sunday night. Anyway, so
brilliant.
So that's what you're doing. You're nearly self-sufficient yourself and Harry and you're getting married, which is great. But the reason you're on, because we better get this out of the way, is to give us a soup. Now this is the poshest soup so far. Which you would expect.
Is it?
Yes, I did. This is the poshest soup so far. Yes, yeah. So go on. What are we to make over the weekend?
Do you know what? It's a celeriac soup with a hazelnut and sage pesto.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people look at celeriac and they think, what can I do with it? You know, and it looks knobbly. It's in season at the moment and you can get it in all the soup. What are you laughing at?
No, I just know. I'm just remembering seeing a celeriac in the supermarket the other day, and it does. It looks knobbly. You're right. Go on. Sorry.
It does look knobbly. So the hardest thing to do is you can't peel it with a vegetable peeler. You've got to peel it with a sharp knife.
Right.
And once you've got that done, the inside of it is so tasty. A taste of hazelnuts, a taste of celery. So you want to chop all that up into small pieces, get your butter on, get your saucepan, you know, butter on melting in the saucepan. Then add in your celeriac, add in celery, add in onion, add in garlic, and let that simmer down. And also add in some hazelnuts. Let that simmer down. And then what you do then is let it simmer for about 15 minutes. And then you want to go over and make your pesto. And so that's hazelnuts toasted and chopped up with fresh sage, chopped up olive oil, mix it around, and that's it.
And there's no cheese in that pesto. There doesn't have to be cheese in pesto, does there? No.
No. So yeah, this is like more like a kind of a salsa, I guess.
Right. Okay.
And then, so you've got your roasted hazelnuts and your sage all mixed up together, olive oil, pop that to the side. Then you go back to your soup, and then you add into your soup, then you add in the stock, and you make sure you cook through all the vegetables until they're soft for about 15 minutes.
Mm.
And then you whiz it up through a food processor. And then you can either add in some creme fraiche or some cream, heat it through again for a couple of minutes so it warms up again, and then drizzle the sage and hazelnut pesto or salsa on top. And it is so delicious.
Okay.
And can I say that for everybody out there making soups, can I give you a couple of tips?
Do, do, please.
I feel like I'm some sort of a soup expert. When I was training years ago, 20 years ago in Ballymaloe, for 1 year I was on the soup section.
Oh, great. You're perfect.
1 year. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
1 year.
Right.
Jesus. So I really know my soups.
Right.
So I'm going to give you a couple of tips.
Great.
To get the best flavor out of any vegetable soup, make sure you sweat them down, and that's without adding in the stock, until they're as cooked as you can without adding in any stock. And I mean sweating down with butter, etc., because that will get the best flavor. The easiest way to make a vegetable stock, and it's so easy, is any bits of vegetables that you've got left over. It could be, you know, the peel from carrots, it could be the end of celery, anything that isn't starchy, and by starchy I mean a potato or a parsnip, pop it into a pot of water, bring it up to the boil, let it simmer for an hour, and you've got beautiful vegetable stock.
Yes,
it's all about the stock.
Right.
And also, then the last tip then is the texture. When you've got a creamy soup like I have, the celeriac soup, it's so nice to put a crunchy texture on top.
Uh-huh.
It completely elevates your soup.
Yes.
It looks so much more beautiful. So even if you've got an old jar of pesto inside in the fridge, take it out, loosen it up with some olive oil, add in some almonds or pine nuts or hazelnuts, or I don't know, you'd have walnuts maybe left over from Christmas, chop them up, add them into the pesto to create that crunchy
and
texture,
drizzle it over the soup. I like a bit of drizzling. Now, so just one question before we go. So celeriac is up there with a turnip when it comes to peeling and chopping, is it? It's that level of work.
Yeah, I mean, what will take you, probably less than like 4 or 5 minutes to actually peel it. So it's doesn't actually take that long.
Yeah, yeah.
It would even take you 4 minutes. It would take you 2 minutes. But it's just, you need a sharp knife. But if you start with a vegetable peeler, you'll be there forever. Just get straight at it with a knife and you're good to go.
Clodagh McKenna, we've run out of time. ClodaghMcKenna.com. And I know you're on Instagram TV, IGTV as well. And
I am doing daily recipes up there. So anybody who wants some daily inspiration, I'm up on Instagram.
Okay, and the great Channel 4, Bridgerton, let me know how you feel. And say hello to Harry first, and next time you're in the country, we come in and say hello. Okay, see you, Clodagh. Bye. Mind yourself. Bye, bye. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah on the way. We are back on Monday. Enjoy your weekend. Whatever you're doing, please do it safely. Good luck.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.